CBSI in the World. I'm John Batchelor with Tim Kaine. He is an economist at the Hoover Institution. He specializes in national security, immigration, and his new study is Beyond GDP, looking deeper at prosperity, progress, and the nature of value. What will you take? What money can I give you for you to give up certain goods, certain understandings, certain assumptions? The surprise of surprises is that we value very highly our health. Is that the way to see this, Tim? The five senses valued here, our health?
That was a very nice surprise. When I looked at all the things in GDP, whether they were durables, non-durables, or services, two things stood out. Running water and electricity. You know, the average person would need $50,000 to give up running water just in their home for a year, or $50,000 to give up electricity in their home for a year. And every other value was below that, right? So there were some at $25,000 and $10,000, $5,000, what have you. Well, then we asked also about vision, hearing, the ability to hear, the ability to speak, the ability to walk, the sense of touch, sense of taste. Those responses, the sense of sight was 200,000, John. So it sort of dwarfed everything else. And that speaks to how important our personal health is to us.
And that makes sense. We are in a pandemic. We've come to appreciate mortality in a way that I don't recall being impressed as to how fragile life is in the 20th century. I understand we had the bomb threat all the time, but a pandemic tends to get your focus very clearly. Now we turn to another part of the study that requires a great deal of explication. This is the breakdown by age, by income, and by childhood income. What do you mean by childhood income, Tim?
Well, so I think maybe I'm a good example here. As I mentioned earlier, I grew up in a lower middle class household, but also in a time when even middle class homes didn't have things because the things hadn't been invented yet. So I would identify as being lower income or below average as a child. But now I got to be honest, I work at Stanford University at a great institution. And I have a PhD and I'm healthy and I have a relatively high income now. So we ask people to identify these super evaluators, whether their income class, you know, below average or above the typical income, as children, and then also in the present day. So we can see if wealthier people value things more to be taken away from them, or poorer people, or if they're all roughly the same. And there's a pretty big difference.
Yes, a very big difference. Let's start with the easiest one, 60 plus. I know that group. That's me. Okay, fine. Durables. In other words, the things that I have accumulated in my life, I value. Do I read this correctly by saying I value them 79% above the norm?
Let me look. This is on page 16.
Page 17. Sorry, Tim.
I have not committed this to memory, John.
Let me generalize. I really value the accumulation of durable goods that I have at 60 plus, as compared to my children, the millennials, who value them less than the norm.
That's right. So you were right. You value things almost double what the normal person does, 79%, whereas people between the ages of 18 and 39, it was about 23% less than normal. So just on durables, not even talking about non-durables and services yet.
Yes, but the pattern's the same. Services is off the charts for me, absolutely.
Yeah.
Electricity must show up. The internet must show up. The exterminator must show up. Who else? They must cut the lawn. I don't give up any of those things. Now, when I was living in a fifth-floor walk-up on the Upper West Side, you know how romantic that can be, Tim. What did I care about mowing the lawn or whether the lights worked or not? In fact,
right.
I remember years turning off the gas in the oven because I wasn't going to cook, and I didn't want to pay $5 a month to Con Ed.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, that's right. So those numbers surprised me how big they were. Like I would get it if it was 20% higher for us older folks and 20% lower. No, we're talking 101% for public goods, 99% for services that the elderly value more, just across the board.
Now, inside this, you measure our rights, and that's a fascination. the rights are, we can generally understand them, your ability to be at liberty in America and to
legal autonomy.
Yes, to go from New York to California without having to show your papers. Too much. There is a pandemic, I understand. But we do have an understanding of rights. I question, however, that it doesn't seem to be anywhere close to services or... Well, it's close to services if you're elderly, but if you're younger, apparently you think your rights are what? Portable? Or you can pick them up and drop them when you feel like it?
That one really baffled me. The biggest gap where the young people valued things less was their rights. In general, they didn't value things as much. Maybe that correlates with they haven't had as much income in their lives. But that one's surprising. And when you dug into the rights, if I can go into that a little bit, we asked about the right of free speech. How do people value that versus the right to privacy versus legal autonomy, right? So this is, you can think of it as not living under a dictatorship. But the rights to free speech were not highly valued relative to privacy. I just didn't realize Americans love their privacy, and I respect that. But their legal autonomy was even double that, if I recall. So it was interesting to see, and I wish I'd asked about more rights, but fascinating stuff.
Status, class, the unspoken mystery of American life, class. The surprise is the gap between people who young people who regard status, class, the least, because they move collectively. The millennials, the Gen Z, they move collectively. They're a beehive. Good for them. We were too. And people with childhood incomes that were very low. They overvalue, do I read this correctly? They overvalue status.
Yep.
And the young modestly undervalue it. They don't make sense of it or not. I wonder if that's because they derive their status from their children. But that's another novel, Tim. I won't ask after that. From their parents.
Well, I'll just pull on that string a little bit, because my interest in this was the obsession with measured inequality. Right? Your incomes are unequal, or wealth is unequal. And I would always counter and say, but we live in this capitalist society where, sure, incomes may be differential, but it produces things that everyone benefits from. I mean, vaccines could be one. But let's just talk about childbirth. Like 100 years ago, the odds were 1 in 100 the woman would be dead at the end of the day during a childbirth. And now it's near zero for everyone, poor, rich, income, you know, ethnicity, doesn't matter. We've kind of knocked that one out. So the medical revolution, the technological revolution, you know, you have poor kids in high schools walking around with computers in their pockets that have wireless connections. So I wanted to get at this really to speak to the inequality debate. And what blew my mind here, John, is folks who are poor now relatively, or poor when they were younger, basically value things more than double what the norm is, and wealthier people value them less. Quite a surprise.
The summary of this is impossible, so I'll just say that our GDP is in – the way we measure our GDP now is inaccurate given how we live our lives. Is that fair, Tim?
It's an accurate measure of transactions. It's an inaccurate measure of values, and we live in a country where values matter.
Value matter a great deal, but still, Adam Smith had it right. Diamonds, water, yes. Beyond GDP, looking deeper at prosperity, progress, and the nature of value. Hoover Institution essay, Tim Kaine of the Hoover Institution. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Beck.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.